going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Browns at number two. What will they do? What will they do? Florio's thoughts coming up at 11:20. And then in the noon hour, Kevin Stefanski, Browns players, speaking in Berea, second day of OTAs. We will hear from them right here on Baskin and Phelps. I'm Jeff Phelps. My buddy to my left is Andy Baskin. Menigan's flying the ship today. You have an offense with the Cleveland Guardians that is just tearing it up, Andy. They are 15th in batting average. That's middle of the pack there. I mean, 19th in runs scored.
Outside.
Hang on. I'm going through some things
right,
you're going to love.
Go ahead. Go.
Yeah,
go.
You interrupted. I was on a roll.
Not really, but that's
you
okay.
Know,
keep going.
Otter looked at me, you know. 15th in batting average, 19th in runs, 10th in home runs. That's their high. In off. They're like 10th. They're not in the top of anything. And yet, solid start at 14-9. They're in first place right now. They've won 5 straight games. They've turned it around a little bit. And just like we saw last year, here they are competing in a year where we thought, will they be able to compete or not? And I thought, yes. Why? Track record, and only track record, of this front office to be able to put competitive teams on the field.
I think the other interesting part about when you look at the dynamic of what the Guardians have been able to do, like it's not like they have these gigantic lead leaguers in anything other than Stephen Kwan, who's in the top 5 in a
Did
couple
you say
categories.
League leaguers?
League leaders.
League leaders.
Are you going to make fun of me all day?
No, I was just trying to clarify what you said. I wasn't quite
Feels
sure.
Feels like he's going to make fun of you all day.
Please don't cut that and put that with the
we're actually,
Will Howard stuff.
We're actually sitting down in the conference room today. And Andy and I are within striking distance
of each
other.
Well, we're supposed to be inside these red lines.
We are?
For the internet.
Yeah.
So Jeff is within, like, look, I mean, seriously, this button is probably halfway, and
I'm right. I'm hugging the line.
No, hugging the line? You're on the other side of the line. Come on.
That's right. Here's the line right here.
If I put my chair right here, we're good.
In other words, you
look
know,
how much empty
if
space
you
have.
If you don't like what
there.
I do, you can turn around and slap me today.
Well, this is true. But I mean,
so,
you actually. Oh, see, now I wasn't
now
too
I'm
far
getting
off.
Away.
Now we're good. Now we've got, like, I'm. Personal space is very, very important to me. I just want you to know that. There are only certain people who are allowed inside the inner circle.
I'm not saying a word.
Jeff, I know that we've worked together for...
All I know is they've won 5 straight, and they're 14-9.
Yeah.
And I think it puts a great spin on what's happening and what could happen this season. And I know somebody who disagrees, and he's not sitting here in the conference room with us right now.
Yeah, talk about somebody...
Go ahead, Menigan. Poo-poo the whole thing.
Get out of my personal space, dude.
Well, I'm glad we're figuring out this odd couple thing before it gets too out of hand and we have a sitcom going. So
the problem is that, you know, we're going through this remodeling phase here at the station, and Jeff and I seem to be getting closer. It was much better when we were farther apart. Jeff would sit across from me. Now Jeff sits next to me, and now he's literally into my personal space.
Do you remember the TV show Murphy Brown?
Yes.
Do you remember how Candace Bergen's character, you know, Murphy Brown, always had a house painter in her house?
Yeah.
That's our engineers. Redoing the studios completely. They are always redoing the studios.
Just wait till there's
they
a tag.
Well, they do a great job of it, but you know, they're tasked.
They're
tasked with doing that. So it's, you know, they're the Murphy Brown house painters is what our engineers are. Wow. And they're great guys. They do a wonderful job.
Just wait till your mic cuts out here.
That's all right. Yeah. Paydays tomorrow.
And when you sit down, there's going to be a couple tacks on your chair.
No, I'm just saying they're doing what they're being tasked to do.
We have the greatest engineering staff in the history of radio. No, I just want to make sure that I'm on the record for saying that. I have no idea what Jeff is talking about. And
Ray, John, Dano, fabulous. They're just doing what they're being asked to do.
The views,
but they're like Murphy Brown's painters because they're always redoing the studios.
The views and opinions of Baskin and Phelps are not necessarily always the same, and the views and opinions of Baskin and Phelps are strictly Andy Baskin's for the good ones.
Dan, you're up there with them. Are any of the guys raising a single finger in my direction?
They're not listening.
They are not listening. They are focused in on what needs to be done to make the studio the best that it can operate.
That's what we're talking about.
Just make sure you tell them Phelps is stabbing.
They're not going to listen to Dan either when he says, "Oh, the Guardians stink."
It's not that they stink. It's the same thing that we said in the beginning of the year when they were scuffling, which is it's 162 games. It's good that it's looking good right now. There are peaks and valleys in every single season. What is happening right now is working well, and I hope it continues to, and I want it to.
Will you give me this anyway?
But let's not sit here and immediately start booking trips to the playoffs.
I couldn't agree with you more. Can you give me this anyway?
Sure.
Looks like, once again, they'll be able to compete in their division and perhaps get to the playoffs by winning their division.
Right, but the question that comes with that is, and this is going to be very unfair.
What happens when they get to the playoffs?
Wait, how many octaves are you going to go up on this one? Keep going.
You made the ALCS last year.
Yeah.
People think you're
pretty good.
People think your window is open to contend for a World Series. Are we really going to be over the moon with just competing for 162 games?
Let me throw this one at you, and I want your opinions.
Okay. That's why we're here.
I don't necessarily think this team is built to win a World Series.
I didn't necessarily think last year's team was built to make it to the ALCS. So.
I agree. I think this is a competitive team. I don't think this is a championship caliber team. I don't. But that doesn't mean they can't surprise us and do some things. I just don't think this is a championship caliber team right now. Hmm. Could be wrong, right?
Could
be wrong. Could have been wrong last year, too.
Steve's in Cleveland. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Steve-O.
Hey, what's going on, man?
You are.
Yeah, I mean, completely. You need three starters that can go over six innings. I mean, obviously,
I don't think
that's an issue.
That. Do you?
I mean,
I don't know that Major League Baseball is looking at this. And remind me, because I think they're looking for openers and not starters anymore.
I don't know if our team's doing that.
I'll finish your statement, and then I'm gonna get to something I heard over the weekend.
It does seem like that, though. It does seem like it's changing into that. But
it sucks.
I mean, back in the '90s, they had more pitching than they would start. I mean, it was crazy. They had great pitching, and they went complete games. It's not like that anymore. And what's up with Class A? He can't find a location to save his life.
All right, thank you. Appreciate it. A little distorted history there because I never thought we had great pitching. I thought we had
back
tolerable.
In the day you did.
With Feller? Are we talking about that? Are we talking about the Feller era? I'm not.
How about the
90s,
Corey Kluber era?
No, but he's going back to the 90s, and I'm like, Dennis Martinez wasn't exactly, and Oral Hershiser wasn't exactly, I mean.
Gamers.
But they weren't like.
One bulldog on the mound.
Did you think either one of those guys was going to go out there and like, oh, it's guaranteed win? No, I never thought.
No, but they had really, I thought they had really competent starting pitching.
They had competent starting pitching with unbelievable offense.
Which isn't a bad
so
way to go.
So I kind of, when I go back
until
and think
you
about.
Up against the Braves.
The 90s doesn't, like, I think the reason they didn't win was because of pitching in the 90s, so. But Hammy brought up this amazing point the other day. An amazing point.
Tom, if you're listening, congratulations. You had an amazing point.
He did have an amazing point. Paul Skeens is pitching in Pittsburgh over the weekend.
You were ready to slap me.
Trust me. I could easily go Three Stooges on the reflection I can see of myself right above your ears.
Yeah, Skeens was nice.
So, but he said, he was talking about the buzz in the ballpark in Pittsburgh, how fans were down there hours before because they wanted to see Paul Skenes, because they had a marquee pitcher who's a starter that people want to go to and they want to see. Fans don't want to see openers. They want to see starters. They want to see guys they think can go out and win a Cy Young. They want, as the last caller said, they want pitchers they think can go six, seven innings or maybe even have the opportunity to go a complete game. The problem is guys like Dan and his analytics killed that part of it.
Guys
and,
like Dan?
Yeah, of course, it's all like Dan. So my Dan. Point is that from a marketing standpoint, you know, the Major League Baseball is not is hurting. I'm kidding you, Dan. That
yeah, right.
Sometimes that you know that they don't that baseball kills itself by trying to do these openers rather than having starters because starters are what the legends of the game are all about. And that we don't have that. And, you know, sometimes you got to think, what's going to put a body in the stands? And if you've got, you know, Corey Kluber even, like there were times I'd be like, oh, Corey Kluber's pitching.
Yeah, I love watching Kluber pitch.
Yeah, I mean, really, do we have any starters right now? Like, oh, I got to go. I got to go. Bieber at one point, maybe? I thought that. But,
yeah.
But the game has changed so much, and it's not helpful. You know, I
maybe,
think
and maybe Bieber's coming back.
I don't know.
Maybe Bieber's coming back.
Yeah.
Matt's buzzing around town. Hi, Matt.
Hey, Matt.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, just wanted to bring up one thing. You know, Jeff, I heard you say a while back something to the effect of, you know, you really don't care if the Indians or the Guardians ever win a World Series. You just like
that's not true. What I want, Matt, I want our team to be able to compete each and every year, and you can't win a World Series unless you put competitive teams on the field. So that's the first step. I like having a product that I enjoy watching, and they do provide
and
that.
Me too.
It would be great if they could win one, and I sure hope they do.
I do too. I just remember the comment a while ago. It's something I just can't get out of my mind anytime I hear you guys talking about this team competing. Like, I love watching it too. Don't get me wrong. I'm going to games.
I'm in it to win it, so please don't. Jeff and I have argued about this for 13 years. I'm in it to win it, so.
Yeah, I want to see a winner. And, you know, going to the ALCS last year and then coming back here just to compete, nah, sorry, that doesn't do it for me. I want to watch us compete, and I will, but I want more, and we deserve more as a fan base. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
All right, Matt. Thank you very much.
You know, I'm talking about, you know, wanting to see starting pitching. Like, you know, if you knew CeCe was pitching, whether it was, you know, for the Indians, you wanted to probably go down and watch the game. And, you know, I think one of the reasons that I hate saying good things about the Yankees, but, I mean, I like Aaron Judge. I just, there's something about him that's likable, and he wears that stupid Yankee uniform.
And he's a beast.
But I still like him. And, like, if someone said to me, hey, and I don't care what city I was in, if somebody said, hey, Aaron Judge is here, or the Yankees are more so Aaron Judge, do you want to go watch him? I'm like, yeah, I do. I want to go see this guy play it because I just, there's something about, we're missing that. And like, Jose Ramirez is that to us right now. But, you know, the marketing, the marquee part of the game is really hurting. And to start looking at pitching as openers rather than starters.
Yeah, but our team's not doing that.
What do you mean? No, I'm just talking about what's missing in the game itself.
All right, 216-474-0092. Folks, they're in first place. Are they fooling us already? It's Baskin and Phelps here on The Fan. Mike Florio coming up at 11:20 from Pro Football Talk. First place, Cleveland Guardians. Think about that, Andy.
Number one, baby.
This is the team that can't score, right? This is the team with all those questions in the starting rotation. This is the team with the closer who's not been the closer that we saw last year. And where are they?
Number one in the American League, tied.
Right now, sitting in first place in their division. It's fabulous. Welcome back to Basket of Phelps. I'm Phelps. He's Baskin.
I got to tell you, Jeff, we are very excited about the Guardians. We're going to talk about them in a second. But we're also going to get into the Browns, obviously, with the draft coming up here. And you know, with the draft just hours away now, don't miss Daryl Ryder and me as we give you our latest edition of It's Always Game Day in Cleveland, where we'll discuss all of the latest talk from what the Browns are going to do to the quarterback situation with Joe Flacco now on board. Subscribe to It's Always Game Day in Cleveland right now at 923thefan.com on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget, you can watch us on YouTube, too. Sponsored locally by Smiley Weld and Bryant, Northeast Ohio's premier heating and cooling solution.
How are they sitting in first place right now? How is that happening for the Guardians? And first of all, we said this before the season, Andy, and I hate to revert to this, except for the fact that it seems to happen way too frequently with these guys. And that's a good thing. We thought, okay, their offense, you know, you traded Naylor. Okay, that could be a problem. Right side of your infield, all new. That could be a problem. There could be all kinds of different things going on that not exactly what you're looking for. That's not good. But here you sit in first place. Why? They're managing the heck out of this team. I give Steven Vogt some credit. Things are working real well. And they're playing the type of baseball, and we said it before, somehow this front office manages to put a team together that competes. I'm not saying they're going to win the division. I don't know that they're going to go to the ALCS. I don't know that they're going to go to the playoffs. What are they doing right now? They're competing. And, folks, I think that you should take some, I won't say pride, but I'll say enjoyment out of that. And I'd love to hear from you. 216-474-0092.
Does beating the Yankees 2 days in a row make it legit? Is that, well, because if you didn't feel like it was legit before, did you feel like it was legit in Pittsburgh? And well, you're like, yeah, it's Pittsburgh.
Yeah, well, it was
maybe because it's the Yankees and you got a little bit of a hangover from last year's playoffs, or maybe it's just the history of these two teams against each other, which absolutely was a lot better when we were kids before they changed the scheduling around. But, you know.
Let me give you two things, okay? And I'm going to give Steven Vogt some credit on these.
Okay.
I didn't like it listening to their telecasts on MLB TV.
Mm-hmm.
Rick Manning didn't like it. Jose Ramirez batting second.
No, I know.
I just didn't care for that. Despite the fact that a lot of teams are hitting key guys second. You want a perfect example? Aaron Judge hits second for the New York Yankees.
But they have guys that can...
I know. Yeah. I still don't get that. You know, there's Judge at 6'7", 280 hitting second, except for the fact that he's hitting like 4'11 right now. And last year he was ungodly hitting second for most of the season. So, okay, that works. But it didn't seem to be working for the Guardians with Jose hitting second. So what did Steven Vogt do? In the Pittsburgh series, he changed the batting order. And what did he do? He moved Jose to third.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the first game, he put Lane Thomas hitting second. And in the four games since, Nolan Jones has hit second. And Nolan is 6'6". He's like an Aaron Judge, right? But he's more of a swing and miss guy than Aaron Judge. However, since moving Jose to three and moving Nolan Jones, basically, because Lane Thomas has been out with injury, to the number two spot, they've won five straight games. Since adjusting the batting order, they've won five straight games. And Nolan Jones in that time, hitting second, 4-for-12, that's .333. Nice. So, Andy, they hit something here. They've latched onto something that seems to be working a little bit.
Well, the other thing that seems to be working very, very well is Kyle Manzardo. I mean, the Coeur d'Alene
guy
is on.
Yeah, he's warmed up.
Fire. He is on fire. Look, I mean, he has what, 6 RBI in the last in the last 5 games. Oh man, and then, you know, he hit the ball into the river in Pittsburgh the last 2 nights. He's had 2 RBI. He's got a home run. He's got 2 hits. He's got a double. I mean, he has done everything you've asked him to do and even more. And I'm excited for him because I'll be honest with you, I was worried about Manzardo and where his place was going to be on this team when they brought Santana back. I'm like, well, what are they doing with Manzardo? I wasn't quite sure. And for whatever it is, the magic is working. So I know he's only hitting .219, but take the last five games all day.
That's way up.
Yeah.
You know, he's been really hitting well lately because his average was, what, about .172?
It's all about the mustache, if you ask me. I mean, there's some power behind
it. Is that what
that is? Oh, yeah, there's like some rhythmic power to it.
I didn't realize
it's he
had.
Feng shui.
That's what that is.
Yeah.
Steven Vogt, big picture, makes the move with the batting order, dropping Jose back to third, putting Nolan Jones at two. They've won five straight games. Little picture. I loved what they did in the sixth inning.
Did you just say little picture?
Yeah.
I've never heard anybody say that before.
Yeah. Well,
everyone always goes, let's take a look at the big picture.
Little picture.
Let me see the little picture.
Sixth inning last night.
Yep.
They're down 2-0. And what do they do? They have men on first and second with one out. And they hit and run, basically. They start the runners, and they get a pass ball. And Stephen Kwan was on second base, and he just kept moving. And he came all the way around from second and scored on a pass ball. And it led to a three-run inning. And if your offense isn't quite doing what it's supposed to be doing, you want it to be better. Perfect. You were really aggressive. Now, it was Manzardo. Manzardo was at the plate. He didn't swing on a hit and run. I shouldn't have said that. But he started the runners. And what would that have done? If Manzardo had swung and hit a ground ball, it probably keeps you out of the double play. So they're trying to be aggressive. They get a pass ball out of it, and Kwan scores from second, a la Kenny Lofton against Randy Johnson back in the day. And then Manzardo comes through, and they turn into a three-run inning, and you win the game 3-2. Thank you. Yeah, that worked.
Bravo, bravo, yes.
And I like it when a manager does some things to try and spark the offense. And Stephen Vogt did that last night.
Yeah, he's not scared to send guys.
No,
he's not scared to do anything.
The big picture, I love the movie.
When it works, he is a genius. When it doesn't work, man, he's not a very smart manager.
Okay, thanks. You want to continue talking about the Guardians, or did you just sum it up?
No, I'm just saying. No, he's made more right decisions than he's made wrong decisions over the last 2 years, too. That's what makes him great. I like him. I like the fact that he's aggressive. I like the fact that he's willing to take a chance. And I kind of like the fact that he saw his closer was struggling the last couple days, and he can hang his hat on the fact that he threw 30 pitches on Sunday.
I like the adjustment made with Jose, but I think that this is an interesting part of it. It's not like he put... Oh, I don't know. He didn't move Stephen Kwan out of the leadoff spot and put him at two.
Right.
He's not putting Angel Martinez at two right now.
So I wonder.
But yeah. he put an unorthodox type of hitter at the two spot compared to old school thinking with Nolan Jones being 6'6", kind of a swing and miss guy, power hitting guy. So he's got Kwan, followed by Nolan Jones, who you would think is a typical 4-5-6 hitter in a lineup, mm-hmm. but he's moved him to two, kind of to get some of that new school thinking, and now follows him up with Jose. And I like that a lot.
The premise of this conversation, I think, is interesting, too. Because, again, we like Stephen Vogt. I like Stephen Vogt. I think he's fantastic. I think he gets his players.
Front office nailed it with the hire. He seems like he's a really competent major league manager.
But here's my question. Did he make the move? Did the group make the move? Did he have to go back and argue for the move? Did the move come from the front office? Like, look, you're tied for the best record in the American League right now. So whatever it is, it's working.
Yeah.
And it does it really matter who made the decision on that? It's funny, I'm listening to you lay out this theory about how he did this, he did this, he did this.
Well, the manager is ultimately the guy who puts the name on the scorecard, ultimately. No, I'm guessing he either wrote it or he has an assistant write it up.
Or it's being handed down. I mean, we've had Brian Anderson.
Which could be.
Brian Anderson has told us hundreds of times that lineup card is coming from upstairs and handed to the manager.
Quite possibly. I'm guessing Steven's writing might be on the card, though.
Oh, I don't think it's Steven. I would venture to say it's not. All the other managers.
They have an intern with great penmanship?
No, it's normally like one of the base coaches or a bench coach or somebody like that. Somebody who has really good penmanship. Yeah, I agree with you. That's how it was. I don't think I would leave you out. I'm just trying to think back to like
whenever. Your penmanship's a little sloppy.
Oh, it depends. Like I wrote my daughter's name down on a cup the other day because we were using plastic cups and somebody had a Sharpie out and I wrote her name very nicely.
And everybody could see it?
Yeah, she goes, whose handwriting is that? I go, it's mine. She goes, what do you mean? This isn't your handwriting? I can read it. And I said, well, I took my time. And she was like, oh.
Well, then that's the...
Isn't that weird?
That's the ticket.
Isn't it crazy how patience changes things?
That's the ticket.
I'm going to stand while everyone's clapping. Thank you. I appreciate all of you. Penmanship. It's where it's at, kids. Stay in school. Be cool. Get some good penmanship. Let's work on cursive. Bring cursive back. That could be another bumper sticker today.
Bring cursive back. People don't write cursive.
How about this? Yeah, really can I give you another thing that needs to come back?
Yeah.
Being able to read a clock. Most kids can't read a clock right now.
Okay.
There's a lot of kids that don't. that don't know how to read. They, all they know is the digital. They're like, I don't know what those arms on that clock mean.
Okay.
Sad, Jeff. Sad.
How do we get there here after talking Guardians?
Because we're learning. You know, at the end of the show, we do Why Are We Smarter? And we give you all these tidbits of information for 4 hours. Go home and tell your kids. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I talked about penicillin.
It's been a pleasure here.
I talked about penicillin in the first segment. No one seemed to notice that.
Who do the Browns take at number two?
I don't know if penicillin can help that or not.
But. Yeah, I don't know either. I've just been really impressed with what the Guardians have done. And they're in first place, folks, through 23 games. Who's surprised? I want to see a show of hands, and I want to hear from you. 216-474-0092. It's Baskin and Phelps right here on The Fan.
The hell is Jake's problem? Winning baseball games better than losing baseball games. Why wouldn't you be excited about something like that? I was pretty excited about beating the Yankees last night. I was pretty excited about beating the Pirates.
That had to have been after Emmanuel Clase pitched.
Oh, okay, fine. Speaking of that, I don't mean to be the bearer of bad news. Cade Smith is not the official closer yet. You may be of that opinion that he should be. Do you believe that Cade Smith should be the closer right
now?
Not yet. All right, what's it going to take for you to change your opinion of Emmanuel Clase being the closer?
Another month of this.
I mean, if you add in the offseason, it's already been like 6 months.
Well, my theory is the Yankees broke him.
Oh, that's a comforting thought. Then if he's already broken, then what the hell? Let's put Cade Smith in to fix him.
Well, you got Carl Willis. Give Carl some time to see if they can fix him.
Do you not? So if they're up 3-2 tonight,
I'm a big Carl Willis fan. I think he's phenomenal.
Well, fine. Well, I'm not even going after him about anything. Right. But if they're up 3-2 tonight, are you not putting Emmanuel Clase out there again?
I am.
Because they didn't. He pitched 3 days, so they weren't going to put him out there last night.
You give him the day off last night, and if you're in a safe situation tonight, you put him out there. Absolutely. He's your closer. You have to.
So you would. Okay. So, but you're saying he's broken against the Yankees. The Yankees broke him.
A little tongue in cheek, but I mean, yeah, look
well,
at.
They don't tongue in cheek here. You either say it, Darryl, with your chest, or don't say it at all, then, damn it.
I was pulling a mitt. That was the inner Mitch in me coming out there.
Well, now you're putting it on Mitch. Mitch didn't have anything to do with this. Darryl had something to do with it. Now, do you think that the Yankees broke him or not?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, you do. So
they figured him out. And so last homestand, the big narrative coming out of the clubhouse was he's got to make adjustments now. There might be a pattern that's been figured out. And so now Class A has to make some adjustments and change some things up.
Yeah,
when it comes to pitch selection. So, I actually went back because I thought maybe his stuff was too straight. The velocity's there, so that's not broken. He's still throwing just as hard. The problem is bats are running into the baseball when he throws it. So, I thought that maybe the stuff was just too straight and true. The cutter wasn't moving like it used to. Fastball wasn't moving. There is still movement there, so maybe there is something to be said for teams have figured out a pattern with him, and now they've got to switch. They've got to switch up the pattern when it comes to pitch selection
All right.
with him. So another month of it. It's still April. No knee-jerk reactions in April, as far as I'm concerned. Let's get toward the end of May. And if he's out there blowing saves by the end of May, then yeah, I think you've got to do
something. Does anybody truly really think that he shouldn't be the closer anymore? Does anybody truly really think that right now?
I mean, granted, these are fans, but
I think we're all getting closer to it. But I think the internet's different from real life.
Yeah.
Does anybody truly believe that he shouldn't be the closer anymore, that Cade Smith should be the closer? Because I think if you do this too soon, it could have disastrous results for you. Disastrous. If Cade Smith's not ready, if Andrew Walters isn't ready to be brought up eventually here, I mean, my God, you go to Cade Smith. Who says Cade Smith is ready for an every night closer role? Because remember, I just put Paul Sewald in my bullpen. That's a guy who does have previous experience with it before. And then I have to talk about my boss there. And my boss is not interested in eating $5 million left of the rest of the season in salary. Right. And then another, I think, $6.5 million getting ready for next year as well. The 2 years at $10 million apiece, that ain't never going to happen. Those are options. So that ain't never going to go down. But this year and next year, if I got a guy who's 100% ready, and I know he's 100% ready, that's easier for me to deal with. But we all know that this is not a team that's interested in wasting a single cent, let alone $6.5 million next year.
The track record, I think, is what helps.
And yes, I know about Miles Straw. Sorry, go ahead, Tom. Daryl.
The fact that the last 3 years, we've become spoiled with him being the most dominant closer in baseball, virtually unhittable at times. He's already given up more earned runs this month than he did the entire season last year, which is obviously alarming. But the track record is there. The organization still believes in him. Carl Willis is still there. And my theory is if Carl Willis can't fix you, you might not be
Does
able to
the
be fixed.
Organization, but, and let me ask you another question that has no answer. Does the organization still believe in him?
I think so.
I don't know if they do.
I mean, they.
How could you still fully 100% believe in him?
I'll say this, Ken. Last home, and I can only speak last home stand. I know they went on the road and they're back in town now. Last home stand, it felt like yes, it wasn't lip service. That yes, they believed in him. I wasn't at the ballpark last night, but
his teammates are going to believe in him or try to. But you will reach a time, and this I still say it's premature to not get rid of him. I am not replacing him yet. But it's the same thing as quarterbacks, Daryl. Guys got tired of having to answer whether or not they thought Deshaun Watson was terrible or not. And then they got tired before that of answering whether or not Baker Mayfield was terrible or not.
Right.
It's going to be the same question that they get asked every night. Stephen Kwan has to answer the question about what's wrong with Emmanuel Clase. Everybody else has to answer the question about what's wrong with Emmanuel Clase. Votes ask the question. Well, Vogt is used to it with everybody, so he doesn't have to worry about that stuff. Antonetti doesn't have to worry about it as much because he doesn't have to talk nearly as much as Stephen Vogt.
Right.
But you cannot tell me that they aren't sitting there going, his velocity's still there.
Yeah.
The some of the pitchers are still working there. What the hell is going wrong with him? Because I don't think that there's a very good answer there. So there's no way. There's no way on earth they are still 100% completely confident.
Remember, this is a guy that when he was blowing saves in the American League Championship Series was putting pictures on Instagram of all of his awards.
Yes, in a game that they ended up winning later on in the game.
I understand. They ended up winning that. I'm just saying.
But no, that's what I'm saying. That's what makes it even worse. You won the game. You won the game. You're defending yourself on the air, on the Instagram.
Yeah.
I don't like that. I want you to put that away. But you can't tell me that they 100%... the biggest homer of the Cleveland Guardians... You're talking to a homer here of everybody. There's no way...
There's no way
on earth that they're... Oh, yeah, 100%. 100%. No. After last year and that it spills into this year, he's looked like his old self, what? One outing this year?
The only thing I'll give
one
you...
One outing?
I think it's fair to say...
That's a high bar. I get that.
Doubt might be creeping in. That's as far as I'll go right now.
I think there is a doubt.
Doubt might be creeping in. I think that's fair to say, but I can't say that they've absolutely lost faith.
There is a doubt, and when you look at the pitchers that they believe that they can fully count on here, I mean, we do not have a lot of pitchers that we can fully count on. Gavin Williams is a pitcher that I think that they want to believe that they can believe in, but I got people at Easter dinner telling me he should be in the bullpen on Sunday, which, boy, I felt good about last night's outing there. Which some people said, I didn't say it. I did not say that about Gavin Williams. I have a relative who said it about Gavin Williams, but they didn't even have the last name Carmen, so I don't want to hear it. Okay, I didn't say that about Gavin Williams. But if you look at where their bullpen is, real quick, how much confidence, before I get to these phones here, 216-474-0092. This isn't even what I plan to do, but here we go. Joey Cantillo. Okay.
All right.
Hunter Gaddis. All right. Tim Herron.
All right.
Jacob Junis. Up and down. Zach Kent's obviously whatever. Luis Ortiz as a starter. Paul Sewald as a closer, as a reliever.
Okay.
Like, you get to okay. It's not the old bullpen mafia what it is. Cade Smith, you have a lot of confidence in him.
It's not what it was last year.
It's not what it was last year. So if I don't believe in my bullpen as much as I did last year, or I did back in the day, then I got to get to my starters. All right, Logan Allen, Tanner Bibee, Ben Lively, Gavin Williams, okay, and Luis Ortiz. I still have faith in Gavin Williams. I still have faith in Tanner Bibee. The other three could go at any time.
Enigmas, yeah.
So I have to have a guy who historically I've been able to count on. And while it's been shaky here recently, I'm not willing to move on from him just yet. Neil in Chagrin Falls. You're next up on the Fan. Go ahead, Neil.
Hey, guys. Good morning. I played college ball. I pitched in college, and I've been in this situation before. Watching Class A, obviously never pitched at those stakes, but the doubt is there. The doubt is real, and that's baseball. He's gonna continue to win with his stuff, teetering on the edge. But I am 100% confident if he comes in against the Yankees and blows another save, he will never recover. He's already. What do you have? Two of the biggest blown saves of his career. If he loses one more with the Yankees, he is mentally done. He'll never recover.
Okay, so Neil, let me ask you this: as a guy who played at a high level, much higher level than I ever played, congratulations on all your success. All right, we got two more games against the Yankees this week. We got tomorrow. We got Wednesday. All right, and then we don't play him again until June. So stick with me on this, okay? Do I have to put him out there just to see whether or not? Because I'd rather it happen sooner than later if it's going to happen. If it's going to break him mentally there, I'd rather deal with it now than deal with it later there, Neil, because I don't want to turn this into Jose Mesa again.
I think Vogt will put him out there. I think the way he puts out John Kenzie, he's going to continue to stick with his guy.
Yeah.
I think mentally, I think he has to put him out there, and it's sink or swim time for him. I mean, it's as simple as that.
Neil, I thank you very much for the call. Like, okay, tonight they pitch at 6:10, which you're upset with Major League Baseball, but I don't know why you're upset with Major League Baseball over this, by the way. You're upset because they're in town this week instead of later in the year?
Well, they put the Yankees and Red Sox back-to-back in April.
Okay.
Why can't you help out your small markets a little bit and split them up? Make sure that you at least get one of them in the summertime.
I think it's the luck of the draw, buddy. I don't think they care.
I understand that, but listen.
I don't think they care.
I know they don't care. That's why I'm mad, because Cleveland wants them.
Cleveland wants them in the middle of the summertime, and Minnesota wants them in the middle of summertime.
I mean, that'll be the argument. Everyone wants the Yankees and Red Sox in the summertime.
Yes.
But here's my thing.
What?
Why can't you do a rotation of it? Why can't one year the Yankees are in Cleveland in May? The next year that it's June or July.
That's probably what they try to do,
do a rotate. No, it feels like the Yankees and Red Sox have been coming to Cleveland in April for the last couple years.
The last couple years. Maybe next year is going to be our year where they're here in June. I don't know. I just want to beat them when we play them. I don't care. I don't care about the Dolans making more money. Why do I care? Why do I care that there's more Yankee fans and Red Sox fans over at Progressive Field?
This is the worst week to have them here.
Okay.
NFL draft week. Cavs are in the playoffs.
But if we beat him, it's the best week to have him here. I'd rather beat him now. It makes me more confident for the rest of the season. This is an early measuring stick series.
I hate the way Major League Baseball does their scheduling.
I'm perfectly fine.
I hate the way they do their marketing. I hate the way they do their TV stuff. I just think that no sport shoots themselves in the foot more than Major League Baseball. And then they want to know why one goes to the ballpark anymore.
Why don't they?
Nobody's watching them on TV. You can't watch them on TV.
They should put them in Sacramento there in the middle of the summer so they can maximize their profits over there in the middle of summer.
And you want to know how pathetic they are? They can't even fill two minor league ballparks. You got two teams playing in minor league ballparks. You can't even fill those.
One is because of a storm. I understand that. One is because of something that can't be helped.
Ken, I understand that, but you still can't fill that ballpark, and it's right next to Raymond James Stadium.
They're a little bit used to that. They should just play the games in Raymond James Stadium then if they wanted a full boat.
Well, the Banana Boys did it.
I'm just going to tell you, I'm only interested in them winning. I do not care. They're going to cry poor anyway, whether or not you get a full stadium of 34,000 or you get 20,000 like you did last night. It doesn't matter to me. And really, I do not need more Yankee fans and Red Sox fans in the ballpark if I'm a Guardians fan.
Do something to help.
I do not care. Their money spends.
Do something to help the game.
I'll take their money. I do not care about Major League Baseball where they schedule the Yankees.
Oh, so you didn't care that all the Cubs fans showed up for Game 7?
That was the World Series, Daryl, not April in the regular season. It was the World Series. Judas Priest. It wasn't just Game 7. It was the other games as well.
I would like to point out, I'm not trying to throw shade at Will Wilson. All right, this is not going to be the topic of this conversation.
Last name, though.
But Doppler Don saying that I'm throwing shade at Will Wilson. I know we have the same last name. It's just he's not very good at baseball. And they called him up over a guy in Juan Brito who appears to be quite good at baseball.
I like Juan Brito. I feel like Juan Brito deserves to play more baseball.
I think the Guardians, conspiracy time. I think they know if you call up Juan Brito and Brito starts tearing the cover off the ball, you're going to have to move Arias to short, and then you have to put Rocchio to AAA.
Yeah, no, this is a stopgap. Wilson's a stopgap.
And so I think that's the game they're playing at. I just don't like the game. Get Juan Brito up here.
All right, especially since Antonetti told us on this station that if you hit, you're going to be able to have an opportunity. And now we fast forward. It's only been a couple weeks. Time will tell. But he has not rang true with those words.
And Rocchio is one of like three or four guys right now who's just not hitting on your roster. Now, I thought it was interesting with Cade York slamming the door shut. Cade York, he slammed nothing shut, other than maybe his own NFL career. But Cade Smith slamming the door shut on the Yankees last night, I think that's the first time I've seen people be like, well, maybe he should just be the closer, despite the fact that Clase just didn't pitch last night because it would have been four straight nights.
And that's it. Like in baseball, you just don't have closers pitch four straight nights. But I do think there was the idea of seeing Cade Smith in that role, performing the way that he did, that, yeah. Some people are like, oh, it's not necessarily splitting the atom to have him try to be the closer out there. He could do it. Like, we do have other options.
I just think what's different about the Guardians than most teams. Like, Cade Smith would be a closer on a lot of other teams.
Yeah.
Andrew Walters would already be a closer on somebody else's team. The Alomon kid they've got. I don't know about Hunter Gaddis. He feels more like a late inning reliever. But Trevor Stephan, when he was healthy, would have been a closer on a lot of teams. I think this conversation with Clase, though, one, before Clase blew the game wide open on Sunday, he had put a couple nice performances together, so he had been trending in the right direction. So I think it's been interesting that after a bad performance in, like, the last week, that's when, not last week, the last four games, all of a sudden people have kind of ramped up the, we got to do something about this Class A conversation.
Well, I think the Guardians have to ask themselves a very honest question. Do they feel like the league is caught up to Class A? Do they feel like, and there's a lot of different ways that they can do this. Like, they have pitching machines now, Nick, that legitimately have the motion and the visual of Class A throwing and then throw his exact pitches to these guys in the batting cages before these games. Like, is it just the technology caught up and so they know what they're doing with Class A? Or has Class A just gotten too predictable in what he's going to throw to begin with anyway?
So I think the predictability thing, I also just think, like, on Sunday, and I'm not trying to, I mean, because the ERA is ample. It's almost eight. I think if you look at his BABIP, he's one of the least lucky pitchers in baseball through however many, what is it, 21 games, something like that, 24 games. So, like, there is the precedence of luck with him.
Sure.
Meets maybe a little too predictable. I think it's wild to me, and I know that this is all related to the playoffs. I do. And the fact that they're going against the Yankees, I was almost relieved that he pitched on Sunday and blew that game. Because that is the last place I want Emmanuel Clase on the mound for ninth inning with a two-run lead after two, not Judges, not, you know, Stanton's. No, it was, what, Chisholm and Jason Dominguez that turned that game from a 6-0 game to a 6-4 game?
Sure, yeah.
So the not good Yankees were beating your ass last night.
Well, the torpedo bats have made Chisholm a brand new player.
But yeah, he's still hitting like a buck something.
Yeah, notice how that conversation went away. Notice how that happened? Everyone was torpedo bat for like a week and a half, and then Chisholm went back down to reality.
I'm still pro torpedo bats.
I noticed, by the way, you brought an advanced analytic into the equation, and I think that's very interesting because you were right about it. But do you want me to acknowledge that or no?
I'm allow it.
You'll allow it?
In baseball, I'm more comfortable with baseball advanced analytics. I think there's too many of them, which means it conflates the conversation because you just choose whichever three advanced analytics
some of them don't. Yes. You know, like BABIP, for instance, what Nick is trying to clarify there, 495 is what Class A is BABIP currently is, right?
Yeah.
The league average is around 290.
Yeah.
Typically it was 300. It's gone a little bit down, further down. Like, basically what you're trying to explain there is that basically players have turned into a hitter we've never seen on planet Earth when it comes to Class A this year, when it comes to putting balls in play.
But I incredibly
unlucky.
I just don't think this is a real conversation, and not because Kate Smith isn't worthy.
I think the fans are very ready to see somebody else in there.
Yeah, and I don't think it should happen, and because I think we're all a little too quick to give up on who this guy has been up until the last series of last year.
Hey, but if you think he's broke, I don't. But if you think he's broke, I could see why there'd be alarm there.
Yeah, well, but this also isn't like there were Jose Mesa yo-yoed between like closer and closer adjacent. He never really lost the title, but other guys were getting, like Mike Jackson was getting like run at the closer spot, even though Jose still had the mantle because he was a fragile young man. I don't think, like, granted, I do think this is partly mental. I think it's in his head, and I think he might be doubling down on some stubbornness, and I think he's costing himself where he doesn't have to be. But if the advanced numbers say, this is unprecedented luck going against you and some of these balls getting through, and there is some stuff to say, well, the way your pitches move look good, you just need to change up where you're locating them or how often you're using them, then I, of all the guys in that pen, I think we owe it to Emmanuel Clase, not because of anything he's done personally. I just mean, like, you owe it to that talent and that level of lethalness to just be like, let's give him every opportunity to figure it out. Oh, because by the way, what are you, 13-9 now? So you're still right there in the thick of it with the division. It's so early. I just don't get the point of rushing to the, you got to bench him or you got to consider giving Cade Smith some save opportunities.
But the value of letting him get back to what he used to be can be immense for this team. I mean, I've told you for how many times we've had a Guardians conversation about the bullpen, about how great they were last year, and how I think that's going to be a hard spot for them to have this season and keep up the rate that they were last year.
But I think, and I thought Ken and Daryl had a really nice talk about this morning.
Well, Daryl kind of waffled a little bit there. That was weird. He got bullied by Ken a little bit, I thought.
And
he said that he was broke. And then he said, no, that's tongue-in-cheek. He's like, just being a little tongue-in-cheek. And then Ken's like, well, say it with your chest. And then Daryl's like, all right, he's broke.
Okay, so I don't think anybody's debating.
Is he broke? Is he not broke?
He's not Class A.
Did the Yankees break Class A?
No, I think Class A broke Class A. I think the pressure...
There was something to the idea of him going on TikTok after the playoff game.
That's kind
of
where I'm at.
That was a complete mental breakdown.
Putting out all his awards. That was a sign of a guy that was not in the best spot.
Not at all.
So here's the thing. I don't think anyone can debate he's not himself. So if that equates to he's broken, that's fine. But like to what the Morning Boys are talking about today of, it's going to start pissing off his teammates. We are miles away from
that. Wait, what's pissing off their teammates?
Maybe I missed this part of the conversation. The fact that Class A is coming in and blowing games.
No. So much of this team understands that they make it to the ALCS last year, and they're in the spot they're in because of Class A being the best closer in baseball.
Well, and it's not even last year.
And you want him to get back to where he was.
In the last 4 years prior to, was about five games last October, closer, seven games in October, and 10 games to start this season. Outside of that, every one of those guys in that locker room remember him carrying the team in the back of the bullpen for the four previous years.
For sure.
So and here's the thing. I don't want to do the thing where, because in sports talk, baseball guys can do this, and it drives me crazy, where you shut down conversations that should be had because you want to act like Mr. Know-It-All. That's not where we are. I cannot possibly see this organization doing anything with Emmanuel Clase that isn't just sending them out there every opportunity they get in the ninth inning, for the rest of the year.
I was going to say, we can't have it go forever, though.
If you're winning in spite of this, you give him as much runway as possible.
Yeah, but then what happens when we hit a little bit of a slide and a hiccup, and then all of a sudden you need 1, 2, 3 games that Class A cost you? I can't do a whole year. I waffled on this in my brain all day long. Really, in the entire time we've talked about Class A, do you give him a month to try to figure this out? Do you give him to the All-Star break to figure this out? There's no way you go past the All-Star break if he's still a question mark when you enter the game with him in the ninth trying to shut it down.
Are the advanced numbers still historically weird?
Well, I guess I would have to find out all these equations, right? These are things we can't answer.
But like, if
we can't answer what the advanced numbers are.
If there's not a velocity drop, if there's like, I just
but sometimes though, sometimes you do see with relievers and closers in particular, when they fall pretty hard, Nick.
Yeah, okay,
but you got to be able to pick up on that.
I just feel like Class A is the I hate that word now. He is the anomaly.
Well, he's got a 99 mile an hour cutter that's great and it's fantastic and it's still moving. But this is different than when Mariano Rivera had his cutter. You know, like 99 is not the same as what it was 10, 15, 20 years ago. These guys can hit fast.
They can, but I think the point is he's got such a track record. He's allowed to have a bad season if that's what this ends up being.
I can't allow it for the whole season. I got to draw a line in the sand at some point. Like if I get to a spot,
there needs to be some level of improvement. He can't just continue to have an 8 ERA. We'll meet in the middle on that one.
Okay, because I'm not at the spot right now where I feel like the game is lost the moment he comes in. But if 2 months from now I feel that way, we're approaching the All-Star break and I feel that way, you can't keep throwing him out.
I think it totally depends on how productive are they. I mean, if the starting rotation is still as spotty as it is, all right, it might speed this conversation up. If the rotation or if the lineup comes back to earth and is kind of who they were the first couple weeks of the season, then it's more of a conversation. If everybody in the bullpen is doing their job but Class A, and the rotation has Logan going and Gavin going and Lively's giving you some good spots, and the hitting's going, like, have as much patience as you need. Because in the end, like, the broken thing, again, is just a weird thing because that there's such a connotation to that. But I know one way he doesn't get unbroken, which is you stripping him of the thing that he's done really well for the four previous years.
It is so much better, obviously, for the Guardians that he gets this thing turned around and looks much better in the upcoming couple months and really upcoming games. It gets this thing headed in the right direction. But I do agree with the idea that you can't go all day with it. I'm not pulling him now, though.
216.
Give him time.
216-474-0092. When does this become a legit conversation about if somebody else has to start closing games for the Cleveland Guardians? I'll say the trade deadline, I don't know, end of season. I have infinite patience for a dude who's had that kind of dominance and who I think that's still there. I think we're much closer to that Emmanuel Class A than broken, delete Emmanuel Class A. Dan Orlovsky, ESPN NFL analyst, coming up in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Charles Robinson just joined us a moment ago from Yahoo. Talked about Jackson Dart. 92.3thefan.com. That interview is going to be going up. Now I'm having problems with my headphones. This is going to be a whole lot of fun for everybody involved here. So, Tom Withers, in for Tone today. I want to make a mention about the Guardians here momentarily. But we just had Charles Robinson, who just joined us from Yahoo Sports. Fantastic writer, senior NFL reporter, Yahoo Sports, one of the best. Follow him on Twitter.
Very plugged
yes,
in.
Yes, yeah. Knows about as much with anybody who does anything when it comes to the great game of football. If Jackson Dart, like, okay, Cam Ward's Cam Ward. We had the story from Schefter earlier today that the Browns tried to move into number one. The Giants had tried to move into number one as well. Titans aren't messing around with that. They're just going to take Cam Ward.
They
probably
tried to move
up.
In as much as they just
called.
They made the calls. Yeah,
they called.
I got you.
So they try to do some things, try to move up.
Yep.
Okay, that's fine. Now you get to the second, you're not going to take, because right then and there it tells you, okay, I guess they're just, if they were that excited about Shedeur Sanders, they wouldn't have called about anything. So it seems they've never been that excited about Shedeur Sanders. So if they've never been excited about Shedeur Sanders, then it leads you into the next thing. This is what I don't want them to do, Tom. Like, one, let's go step by step. We don't have a lot of time, okay?
Gotcha.
Step by step here. Can I start to say tomorrow on The Fan with Daryl that because they were trying or they were calling about number one, that they were never enthralled with, they were never totally enthralled with Shedeur Sanders?
Yes.
Can I say that?
I think you can.
Okay.
Fair assumption. I'm sorry.
If Jackson Dart goes ahead of him, goes to New Orleans at number nine, whether it be fit, whether whatever, I don't care. If Jackson Dart, I mean, if you're drafting a guy that high, it has to be more than fit. If Jackson Dart goes to number nine, then I'm going to go, okay, there's like-minded teams here that don't feel that high about Shedeur Sanders. Then, damn it, I don't want you moving back into the first round for Shedeur Sanders if he starts to fall.
Yeah.
Because I don't think, and this is where, I'm careful about this because I've defended his mentality before. I've defended how he's taken in by fans. I've defended that I think that he is, of all the quarterbacks, mentally the most ready to take over an NFL team because he's been dealing with criticism
I buy that.
His entire college career since we all knew him. But damn it, I don't want you forcing yourself into another conversation because he's different than all the others. It's an uphill battle with all the other ones. This one, you know, it's going to be a shared quote-unquote process, which is what's been said. Lewis Riddick said it's going to be shared. Okay, if it's shared, number one overall, we can talk about sharing. If you are taken 24th after the Browns trade with the Vikings or something, I'm just looking at the, you're trying to lead whatever team,
Yeah.
That's not necessarily shared. That's there's something that definitely needs to be learned here that you're going to have to come together with me on.
This is going to be the Shedeur Sanders draft, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, that's going to be the focus on Thursday night from the time that Cam Ward is taken.
Yes.
It's going to turn to, okay, here's Shedeur in the green room. Who's interested? Is he going to slide? You know, as Charles mentioned before, he could go everywhere from 3 to the Giants to 63rd to whoever that might be picked. I mean, it's going to be fascinating to see. I can never remember, Ken, in all my years of covering the NFL draft, a year where there's been this much uncertainty at the top of the board. It's incredible.
I just think if you're that uncertain with the situations that the Browns and the Giants are in, Joe Shane and Brian Daboll and Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, you know, you both got mulligans for last year, whether fans agree with it or not. I just, if you're thinking about it, then I think you've given your answer. I really do.
That's a great way to look at it. And as you and I have talked about, you know, how gun-shy are the Browns at this point about making a decision at quarterback, at least in the draft?
Well, because I don't want to be caught in a position where I waste a first-round pick, and then if I trade back in, I'm giving more to give up a first-round pick. Right. I don't want to do any of those other things. That's why it's like, all right, you know what? You're that excited about Tyler Shuck. I know he's 137 years old or whatever. You're that excited about... I love Will Howard.
Will Howard.
Damn it, even if you're that excited about Jalen Milroe, even if you're that excited about him, which, boy, I got my worries of what they would do if they had Jalen Milroe, where I'm afraid that it wouldn't even get off the ground before you could even tap into his potential. Fine, because I hate to put it this way, they're easier to move on from. They're easier to move on from, which is an ugly thing to say, because these are people's lives we're talking about here, but yeah, they're easier for us to kind of put on the back burner and move on to another quarterback if it comes down to it with somebody else.
Well, and as you know, there's so much movement at the quarterback position now around the league. It's like I hear people talk about all the time, if you don't take a quarterback here at the top of the draft, you're going to have to wait till next year's draft. No, you don't. There's free agency. There's trades. There's all kinds of ways to skin a cat here.
I mean, you look at what Kenny Pickett is. They don't want to give up on Kenny Pickett, so they're going to go ahead and they're going to see what they have on Kenny Pickett, and I can understand that. We only have a few more minutes left, so I want to bring up the Yankees series that starts today. Guardians are 12-9. Mm-hmm. They should be right back up at the top. I actually didn't look at the Central standings. They should be right back up there at the top of the Central.
They're a
half game out still. Tigers have been...
Okay. That's going to be a two-horse race all year, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, unless you think the Twins and White Sox are going to start to make... What's going on with the Royals? Is there anything that we can deduce from that?
I can't. Their pitching has not been what they had expected. Their lineup has not been hitting the way they expected.
Michael Lorenzen likes to show off the pipes.
They're in a little bit of a funk right now.
Is tonight and the next two nights a measuring stick?
Yeah, to a degree. I mean, it has to be. Anytime you've got the AL champion coming in, you're facing the team that knocked you out in last year's postseason. You know, the Torpedo Bats, Aaron Judge, right on down the line. This is the gold standard right now in the American League, so it is a test.
Because I think this is the first one. You got a lot of Yankees fans in here. I think this is the first one where fans kind of jump in and see what they got. I thought you know, it's one thing to beat. There's a lot of people I think that are kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop every year, and that they're going to be, because it's hard to sit there and yell at the Dolans, or it's hard to yell at us about wanting us to yell at the Dolans when they are continuously a good franchise and when they are continuously competitive. They don't win it all, obviously, but they usually compete and they can win the division. But I think for a lot of those fans, beating the Royals doesn't matter.
No.
Beating the Twins and beating the Tigers doesn't matter. I looked at the Orioles series, because a lot of people picked the Orioles to go to the World Series this year.
Good team. Yeah.
So I started to look at the Orioles series differently, and they dropped 2 of 3. It was the first time they had back-to-backs and all the other stuff.
Could have won a couple of those, too, by the way.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
I think the Yankees series is the first one where people are going to be – like, this one might be the one where you get hot opinion.
I think this homestand in general, right?
Three against the Yankees, Red Sox afterwards.
Three in the Red Sox, four with the Twins. So I think, you know, longest homestand of the year, I agree with you. I think the casual fan starts to really pay attention right now.
Because I think that, well, first off, you know, Gavin Williams goes tonight. Yep. I've been soft on him to start off the year. I think that a lot of the reaction has been overblown.
He's got to be better, though.
I mean, obviously he does, but I still think it's early in the season. He's a young guy. So I think he can calm down. Because again, if you can't develop starting pitching, then we are going to turn into the Pirates, and that's going to be the end of it. Because they have to have, like, the Pirates need to have more than Paul Skeens. We have to have more than just one starting pitcher, and we have to have more than Shane Bieber whenever he's able to come back.
True.
So you have to have, historically, you have to have more than a guy like Shane Bieber. So I got to at least have three guys, and then piecemeal it together after that. Gavin's going to have to be one of those guys. So I'm pretty soft on Gavin. Of course, see me tomorrow and see where we're at on that. Because, I mean, honestly, because I might be pretty annoyed by some of the Yankees fans that are in town for this one, because there's a lot of Yankees fans that are out there for
it.
Like guys like Mitch, who's a half-ass Yankees fan, who says he's a former half-ass Yankees fan. But Meredith, as you know, once you say you're a Yankee, once you declare that you're even a part a Yankee fan, I think you always are declared that you're part of a Yankee fan. You always remember it.
I would buy that. Hey, let me just say this, though. I think I like the way Stephen Vogt has been open with his lineup so far. He's tried a few things. I'm glad that he's finally got Ramirez out of the two-hole. I think he belongs in the three-hole. I think Manzardo is now going to slide into that cleanup spot. I think 1, 3, and 4 are settled.
Okay.
You can, you know, plug other pieces in here and there, but I like Vogt's willingness to kind of move things around. He did that on the road trip.
So far, I've liked what they've done offensively. I'd like to see more at bats for Jhonkenzie Noel, even though I know you're not going to pitch him or you're not going to play him against certain pitchers. I need a bopper somewhere. Manzardo's coming around, but I'd like somebody to be a threat. But
Jones is coming around a little bit as well. I liked him in that two hole. He had three really nice at bats against Skeens on Saturday. I thought that was a real positive.
That was a very good point.
Yeah.
We have Florio. That's producing right there by many.
That's Menigan. Good. Dan knows how to use his fingers, dial a phone.
That's really good.
I bet he didn't even do that. I bet he just sent one of those newly fangled text messages.
We'll be heading out to Berea. Select Browns players and select head coach will be speaking in Berea. We will hear those here coming up in the noon hour, maybe beyond. Chris Rose is going to join us today. Michael Lee, Washington Post NBA writer, who wrote a real terrific piece on Darius Garland and some of the things going on that Darius has overcome that you might not really know. Michael joining us in the 1 o'clock hour. I'm Jeff Phelps, my partner to my left today. We're sitting in a conference room. Andy Baskin. We're talking Guardians right now. Nobody cares. I'm just telling you. Nobody cares. Sorry. What? Can we not just, like, talk and have conversation?
No. This is conversation. This is called real-world conversation.
We've been talking Guardians.
I'm honest with you, and you don't listen to me.
They've won 5 straight games. Stephen Vogt made a switch in the batting order. Jose Ramirez dropping out of 2. They haven't lost since. Jose hitting 3rd. It was Lane Thomas hitting 2nd for 1 game. Then Nolan Jones for the last 4, and he's hitting .333 over that stretch. Maybe Vogt found something. He was aggressive last night.
I'm surprised you haven't done your Nolan Jones victory dance lately.
Well, he's hitting under .200. Not much to celebrate yet. Roger is in Richmond Heights. Hi, Roger.
Raj.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. What's going
Couldn't
on, man?
Be finer.
Well, I just wondered if the Yankees are using the torpedo bats because they seem to be handling Judge. They seem to be handling Judge pretty well. Are the Indians using the torpedo bats?
No, we're using anti-torpedo baseballs only when we have them.
That whole narrative kind of died down, Roger, because after the Yankees beat up that Brewers pitching staff early on, the Yankees went into a slump. So apparently torpedo bats can go into a slump as well.
So they are using the torpedo bats, but do the Guardians use them?
I know that somebody, was it Stephen Kwan? Was swinging
Stephen Kwan using the torpedo bat.
He was using one in batting practice, I know. Guys are always going to look for an edge, Roger, so I'm sure that there are some torpedo bats floating around the Guardians locker room, and I'll be real honest. I don't really pay a whole lot of attention to the shape of the bat because the torpedo bat thing, in my estimation, died down very quickly.
Why does the commissioner allow such teams?
Why? They're a standard barrel. They're within the specifications.
Yeah, it's a legal bet.
Yeah.
Oh, well, okay. I just wondered. It doesn't seem like they're the same unbeatable Yankees team.
Well, and right? Roger, thank you. Let me quote Dan Menigan.
Yeah.
Have you seen the Brewers pitching staff? That's when all the buzz happened about the torpedo bats, and Dan kept saying, yeah, because the Brewers pitching staff stinks.
It's gotten better.
Maybe it was a combination of the two during that series. Might have been. Jeff is in Strongsville. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning, gentlemen. One of the previous callers before the break was talking about the fans in Pittsburgh. The only reason it was the way it was when Skeens was pitching, and I don't know if you guys hit on this, but I do know people that went to that game was because they had a bobblehead. So to compare Cleveland fans to
No one was comparing Cleveland fans. That's not what the point of the story was. It was about starters and openers. It had nothing – like, I didn't sit here and say, oh, Cleveland fans and Pittsburgh fans are – but no, it's about creating a buzz. Hang on, let me finish. It's about selling tickets because fans get engaged with a starting pitcher. They're like, I've got to go see this guy pitch. That's all. It had nothing to do with the cities.
Yeah, but I think the caller was comparing Cleveland fans and Pittsburgh fans. We don't chant at Guardians games, sell the team, right? We're there. The fans that do go, while might not be as many for that specific game, still cheer on the Guardians. And I would like to take it a step further. This Guardians team reminds me a lot of the Cavs as well. You've got a relatively young head coach. You've got somebody that, or a new coach, I would say, to the team.
Yeah.
You've got some superstars. You've got some young players that are stepping up. And this Guardians team is scrappy like it always is. You know, we're never going to be the team that spends a ton of money like the Yankees. But guess who we're beating? Guess who we've just taken two from? Why do we as Cleveland fans always have to look and project out? Let's live in the here and now. The Cavs are playing very well. They're in the playoffs.
I can appreciate what you're saying right now. It had nothing to do with the premise of that. There wasn't a caller.
It was me, Andy.
It was me, and I never once compared Pittsburgh fans to Cleveland fans. My point was about having starters and having, you know, it's about selling tickets. It's about being engaged in the game. It's about marketing the players. It's about wanting to go to the ballpark to watch a starter because there's a buzz in the ballpark. That's what the whole premise was. Not once did I compare Pittsburgh fans to Cleveland fans or bobblehead giveaways. We have bobblehead giveaways all the time too. The point of the matter is you want to be able to be locked in with a player and say, that's my guy. Wow, look at this. We got a guy who's throwing every fifth day. I mean, Jose Ramirez is a reason to go to the ballpark every night too, but it's not, you know, the marketing aspect of it, it's a major league whiff by Major League Baseball. It's not just the Guardians do everything they can, but this had nothing to do with Pittsburgh versus Cleveland. I'm just on the record for that.
So. And I didn't take it as you stating that. I thought that the caller was equating that to Guardians fans and saying that we're not doing something that we should be. And you're right. Major League Baseball has a problem with marketing their games. 100% agree. And it's sad because a lot of youth today, they don't see themselves in a lot of these players that they technically and really should be, because a lot of these players are approachable, like Stephen Kwan. I mean, Stephen Kwan is probably one of the most likable players in all of sports, not just baseball, but all of sports. And he's not. Major League Baseball does nothing to promote him. Ramirez, the same thing. But Stephen Kwan is so likable because he's such a hardworking guy that we love him. But outside of Cleveland, most people don't know him. And that's a good point.
That's a really good point.
Jeff,
I agree with that.
Thank you for the phone call. Jeff. Appreciate that. Guardians in first place, 1-10 today. They will try for the sweep. Sweep!
Hey, Dan, are we a little too excited about two wins over the Yankees during the regular season?
I wouldn't say we're even excited about it. They're just playing good baseball.
No, but just the last couple of calls, like, is this the do you think that there's a feeling here that, oh, man, we're beating up on the Yankees? It's April, kids. It's April.
Yeah. You know? And by the way, there's nothing wrong with getting excited for beating up on the Yankees. Everybody should be excited about beating up on the Yankees.
Beating up is probably not the right word.
They've been one of the goals of every team.
One, two.
Yeah, they've been good games.
every team should want to beat the Yankees. That's what all the fan base wants, and every fan wants.
And ultimately, they're one of the teams that you would think you might have to go through to get to the World Series.
I think.
Plus, Jeff and I are big AB fans. We're big Aaron Boone fans. Huge, gigantic.
I think the big thing that comes with it, I mean, of course, you know, anytime that the Evil Empire rolls in, it's fun to take down the Evil Empire and show that whatever you're doing is working and all that kind of stuff. Like, yeah, it's a big deal. It should be a big deal. It's fun for fans, but it's one of 162 on top of it. And some games mean a little bit more. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's what makes it fun. Emotion comes into this.
And maybe part of the problem with it is that Aaron Boone gave me like four or five concussions when he was playing for the then Indians by hitting me in the head in each and every game. I became his good luck piece. He would come out of the dugout. I'd be sitting in a silly little chair right in front of the dugout, and he would whack me in the head, much like I've wanted to do to Phelps like six times during the show today. Right?
Yeah, which is certainly not a surprise, is it?
Knock, knock, knock.
No. Yeah. Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk is going to join us coming up in, what, 9 minutes?
There you go.
And we're going to get to that in a second. Jeff, is this the same Jeff in Strongsville? Jeff, this isn't the same Jeff in Strongsville, is it?
Nah, this is Jim.
Oh, hi, Jim. Hey, Jim, how are you?
What's up, man?
Says Jeff on the screen.
Before I get to my call, guys, really you're bringing this guy back on. I'm not even going to go into it. Get ready for 15 minutes of Haslam ripping, Browns hating.
Florio?
Oh, my God.
Dude, we like you. We bring you back all the time, too. Florio is probably one of the most respected guys in the game. Whether you like him or not, he's respected.
The next time he – am I wrong or am I right? Next time he says something nice about the Browns, we'll be the first.
You're wrong. He said good things about the Browns along the way. Mike Lombardi would crush the team every once in a while. There are other people. Who's our buddy from Baltimore?
Lock Amphora.
Lock Amphora ripped the you-know-what out of the team.
He's going to rip on Haslam. He's going to say Haslam's meddling. I mean, I can already predict the interview. But anyways.
You're right. Let's have everybody on to hold two brown and orange flags and wave them violently while they talk to us.
Dan, I don't mind criticism, and I don't mind, but I did. If you think Florio's giving you like quote unquote middle of the road, that dude is. I just don't know how you can say he's not jaded at the Browns and Haslam. I mean, he is.
Because we've had people who are very jaded at the Browns and Haslam, and he is nowhere near there. He is giving you information. I mean, Florio says some stuff every once in a while that makes you go, "Wow, I can't believe he just said that." But not nearly as much as some of the other guests we've had.
Jim, you better get to your point. We got about a minute.
You got 1 minute. Real quick,
I had heard the last caller about the marketing, and I don't know if it's because the Guardians are on MLB Network or not that I've seen it. Look, they're marketing the kid in Cincinnati. They're marketing the kid in Baltimore. They're marketing Skeens. They're marketing these young players. I've seen it more this year. As a matter of fact, I made a mental note the other day. Like, I can't believe how much they're pushing these young stars and the way that they're going about doing it. Yeah. Now, again, I don't know if it's because they're on MLB Network. And I get it that these three guys are on the cover of their, you know, flagship video game. But they're doing a good job. I mean, it's the personalities, and that's what they're actually finally, for the first time that I can remember doing.
Yeah, I took the conversation in the wrong direction. The bigger point was, Dan will bring this up too, because statistically it sounds like they might be pushing back in the other direction. It's about having starters that you want to go see pitch at the ballpark. Really, that's what it comes back to. That's all.
You hit
the nail on the head with Skeens. You were right on Skeens, 100%.
Yeah, it's the personalities, guys. Like, I get it. We all love Jose, and he's a great ball player. But it's these other guys have a little flair to them. They've got that, and that's the key. And I think they're doing a good job of showing that.
Our guys are too nice.
Jim, thank you, buddy.
We need a little bit. As I was listening to it, we need a little more Paul O'Neill in the world.
Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk. What will the Browns do it to? What's Florio hearing? Trade possibility? Maybe. Well, let's find out. Florio's next on Baskin and Phelps.